What's up, my freaks, sharpness geeks, and purveyors of stabbing goodness? Welcome to the Knife Freak Show, live. What's up, Chase?
I'm here, and I'm hearing you in double, so it's great.
Yeah, I'm still trying to figure out what's happening there.
I think the mic is picking up both.
Let me move this speaker.
Yeah.
All right, guys. All right, so those of you that are on the live there, we're just going to talk for just a minute. Those of you that are just joining the last couple of seconds here, Chase and I are going to catch up for just a second here. And then while you guys start posting some questions, comments, whatever, and then we'll jump in and we'll go from there. Uh-oh, saying the echo is crazy. Is it still?
Yeah. Yeah.
So that's probably on the live, but not necessarily on the recording for the podcast. Huh. Wonder how we fix that.
No clue.
Let me move my phone further away from the speaker and see if that helps at all. This may be a headphone kind of situation. Let us know if anything we do changes the echo, guys. Sorry, this may have been a horrible idea to try to combine a Instagram live and a podcast. We'll find out, I guess. We may be finding out the hard way here. All right, so while we're doing that, you guys can hop in and tell us if the echo is still really bad. We'll see if we can figure out a way to fix it. But in the meantime, how was your week, Chase?
It was good. Got a pretty good bit done. Kind of had a shorter week because had some other stuff going on between my wife having to do some stuff and my mom also having some stuff to do. She runs a small business, so I was helping her some. And so there was a lot of bouncing around and a little bit shorter of a week, but it was pretty good. How about you?
Okay, good. Yeah, we had a good week. We actually had a really good week. We had a just a little peek behind the curtain. We actually had a professional videographer come out this week on Monday, which was really cool. We got some really cool video and that you guys will be seeing down the road. But I'm sorry, I'm trying to also fix this echo deal that's going on the live. So
yeah, I'm covering my microphone on my phone. That's why I'm holding it weirdly. I think it was picking up both.
Yeah, that's what mine's picking. It's my phone picking up but I don't really know how to fix that.
Yeah, me either. And I'm not sure if people can even hear me.
I'm going to turn down the volume on my speakers that you're coming across. Maybe I'll still be able to hear it. All right, guys, can you let us know if that's Chase, say something and see if that's any better. Number one, tell me if you can hear Chase, and if so, is it still echoing bad?
Can you hear me? Is anybody out there? You. Okay.
Pastor Pike. Yeah, I know. Headphones is probably a good idea, but unfortunately, we do not have any, so we'll keep that in mind for if we try this again. This was maybe not the best idea here. I don't think I have anything that will work.
I know that's a little better.
All right, so me turning you down. So you may have to repeat yourself a few times. Guys, my hearing is pretty shitty from lots of guns and machines and stuff over the years. So I'm trying to get it turned down enough so that it's not blasting you guys with echo, but where I can still hear and have the conversation. So, all right, we appreciate the feedback, guys. Just bear with us here on all this. So anyway, to finish up my thought, we had a videographer in here. So that did slow us down a little bit on our production on Monday, but overall the rest of the week, guys, they kicked ass. We had a pretty good rest of the week considering it, because we had to have it super quiet in the shop, and basically like it's almost spooky how quiet it was in the shop. It was just like just crazy. But anyway, just never that quiet in here.
Yeah.
But
happy birthday, Paul, by the way, if Facebook didn't lie to me. Told me it was your birthday. Along with
happy birthday.
Yeah, I don't think Jake's on here, but happy birthday to Jake McCoy as well. So you and Jake McCoy share a birthday.
Happy birthday.
Yeah. So, but yeah, it was, I did find out something, that apparently I am too old to bounce in a bouncy house. I figured that out yesterday.
You got kicked out or because you hurt yourself?
No. More so the second one. I feel like I've been kicked in the ribs repeatedly today. I don't know what is happening, but it feels terrible. But yeah, so that's how you know you're old, I guess. Too old to jump in a bouncy house. Who knew? I was kind of flying around, jumping over things, doing front flips. So, you know, didn't necessarily take it easy. I was at a 4-year-old's birthday party. So, you know, they were kind of egging it on. But
yeah. Yep. That will do it. It will catch up to you eventually.
Yeah.
Sorry, guys. We're still working through it. And those of you that are listening on the podcast that aren't hearing all this nonsense, but you're hearing us talking about the echo and stuff, it's on the Instagram Live where we're hitting them with the echo pretty bad. So apologies. We're going to see if hopefully we can still make this into a decent podcast here. It was my bright idea to try to combine the two, and it may have been a horrible one. But all right. So considering all that, let's see. We've got I had seen a couple of comments and questions besides the echo stuff. So hello, everybody. For one thing, we appreciate you joining us. Now, it was relatively short notice. Let's see.
Anthony 609 said, what are y'all carrying?
What are we carrying?
Yep.
You go first.
Got a Mudlark in 154 CM, black linen, red liners, Kydex eyelets for a bead because I didn't feel like making a bead. And yeah, so I'm doing the no Locktober thing for now, which means basically just slip joints and fixed blades.
One of those trends, huh? Never even heard of it.
Yeah.
That's how out of the loop I am.
Yeah.
But that's cool.
What you got?
Of course, I'm rocking that Big Dixon Energy. Just you can tell if you see the tip of mine, that's about time to clean it. It's probably strop it. I'm actually not sure. Oh, I know what that is. I just was out putting out some corn a while ago, and I was cutting open the corn bags with it. And some of it had gotten a little wet, so now I have wet, sticky corn on my knife. That's not something you hear every day.
No, it is not.
The wet, sticky corn episode. I think some of it had gotten wet. It may have even been a little bit fermented, so I may have some drunk deer on my camera. We'll see. That could be interesting.
Yeah.
So,
that'd be fun.
All right. I did see where somebody, 321 Psych, was asking about a hollow grind Mac 2s. Yeah, that will happen. What we're doing right now is, since we're running almost 100% Dixons right now, we're going to be running those, and then we will we'll switch back over to Mac 2s at some point. And when we do, at the moment, I've still got a few flat ground blades that we need to work through. Like, I can't just scrap them and throw them away. So we've still got a few of those to work through, but not a ton. And then when we get back into them really heavy, we will be switching over to the hollow grinds on those. So yes. I'm not exactly sure how soon, but that's the plan.
Wyatt, what's up? Bilgewater? Been a while since I spoke to you, so just saying hello. That's Bilgewater Blades. He's another maker out in California somewhere, I believe.
Cool.
Yeah.
Glad you joined us.
Let's see. Caballero JC said, can't wait until the two of you do a collab, which we kind of have. But it was just, one-off sort of things. One was he ground the blade and I did everything else. And the other one was the Dixon that I took to Blade Show Atlanta this past year, where it was, you know, his design, but I just made it in my shop. And so done a few things, but not a, you know, full-on, I guess, real collab or anything like that. No sort of production line. Dave, putting me on the spot. That'd be Wagner Made Tools, for those of you who don't know. It's Dave. He said, Chase, when are you going to get a CNC? And at some point. that's the best answer I've got right now. I don't know. When I can make it work feasibly and all that. These things take time.
It's a big step.
Yeah.
It's a big step. There's more to think about, guys, than just there's more. We probably talked about it a little bit, but there's more to think about than just strictly like getting the loan and buying the thing or whatever. Number one, that's just buying it is the biggest part of the expense, but then you've still got to deal with all the tooling and stuff. And that's like, you know, tool holders and tooling is expensive. Like, it's, you know, so yeah. It adds up. You start loading a machine up with tool holders and tools, and it doesn't do you a bit of good without them. So it's 100% just part of the cost that you have to eat up front or whatever. So yeah. And then you got to deal with
that's not even
making sure that you've got good air, good clean, dry air going in it. So, and and that your air is enough to do run your CNCs, and that when you run your blast cabinets, it doesn't end up sucking too much air out of the system so that your CNC airs out, which it will. You've got to have the right power in there, depending on which machine. But I believe you can get, I believe, are the mini mills just 220? Are they single phase?
Yeah, they're single phase 220.
That's what I thought. So that, but still, you got to have.
If I can fit it in my laundry room, I'll put one in there.
Yeah, that's why. I mean, yeah, I mean, you got to think like these. I mean, some of the stuff that we're, when I started off, I literally had an extension cord running 100 feet from the house back to the shop for power. So, it's, yeah. And having, just having 220 power was a pipe dream, much less anything beyond that. So yeah, there's a lot of stuff to think about to get ready and make sure you're ready before, before you just up and pull the trigger on one.
Yeah, but for sure. I don't even have 220 out in the shop at the moment. And I mean, I could get it fairly easy. But it's just, it's a slow moving process, and it's like, well, am I ready? Am I not ready? You know, like, do I try to do all these things first, or do I jump in and then see, you know, what I need? But you know, every day you're not making money with that thing. You're, you know, losing money basically. Cause I mean, they're not cheap, but I mean, they're not as expensive as they used to be, as prohibitive as they used to be, but I mean, they aren't, it's nothing to scoff at. So,
yep. It definitely is. It's one of those things where, like you said, you got to be ready, but of course you also know my opinion on it too, of like, you know, you're never going to be fully ready. So at some point you got to be reasonably ready and then jump. So you can't be frivolous with it, because you could definitely put yourself in a hole real quick, because that machine payment's got to be made, whether you're, you know, it don't care. They don't, whoever your loan is through, they don't care whether or not you're, you know, able to make parts that week or not. That's
totally
beside the point.
That's the razor wire that I'm dancing on at the moment, is the trying to be ready enough, but not, you know, try to get concerned with being, you know, like everything down to the, you know, absolute perfect detail before I, you know, even pull the trigger on it. Like, I'm trying to figure out where I'm at in that time frame. So, yeah.
Yep. So I see we had a, these always tickle me. Where'd it go? Special, unique.
Hello, how
item.
Are you?
Hello, sir. Would you want to buy any product from my shop? Well, no, I would not. Would you like to buy any from mine? Like, I swear, like, I get that there's language barrier and all kinds of stuff, but like, do you not see that we, like, that we are a knife company that makes knives? Why would we want to buy something from a, you know, overseas? In my experience, it's usually like Pakistan is usually where those come from.
Yeah.
The ones that I typically get hurt with, that's just hilarious. It's like,
yeah. I mean, I don't know. Cause I mean, I don't remember getting them as much, like, you know, when I just had like a knife collector account, you know, like, I don't remember getting them as much, but it seems like it hasn't been as bad lately, but there for a while it was two or three every day. Like, you know,
yeah,
just nonstop.
It's like they can't distinguish between like dealers and makers or manufacturing companies. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
It's like, oh, they're selling and promoting knives, so maybe I can sell them some knives.
Yeah.
Well,
I usually just end up blocking them the second I see them follow me, or, you know, liking my stuff or any of that. I just go ahead and blow them away, and that'll be the end of that.
Yeah.
I had one, like, take one of my photos and post it on there, and as if it was theirs, and be like,
you know,
DM to order and all that. And I was, after that point, I was like, nope, you don't even get the chance anymore.
Yeah.
So,
yep. Best thing you can do, because they're going to just, you know, they're just going to end up being a nuisance when it's over with, before it's all over with. So just might as well just go ahead and block them and be done with it.
Yep.
So
for sure.
I see another, I think maybe he wasn't on here yet when I, or maybe he was, I don't know, but or at least when he asked the question about the hollow grinds on the 3.5. So yeah, I did address that, but short answer is yes. When we switch back to 3.5, we do have a few, flat ground blades left to work through, but I think it's maybe a couple hundred, something like that. After that, we will be switching over to hollow grinds on those as well. So that will hopefully answers that. And I'm actually really looking forward to being able to do that. I'm anxious to see them with a nice hollow grind on them.
Yeah.
The way we're doing them currently, like the Dixons have.
Yeah, I'm interested to see how they'll look with the new grinding style or technique.
I feel like it's going to look good, but also I know from the way the Dixons have turned out that it's going to be like a very functional grind, because those things are slicers big time. I'm very pleased with that. All right, let's see. Not tons of people on here. We definitely waited a lot. We're going to probably do this once we figure out, maybe get us some headphones and stuff, guys, where we can make this a little more professional. We'll try this again, I meant to do a heads up on this earlier in the week and then kind of a little reminder every day, but I failed. So,
but yeah, I really like the finished honeycomb Dixons, by the way.
Oh, yeah. Thank you.
I think I like them more than the Frag, but that's, you know, of course, just a subjective whatever thing.
Yeah. I like them too. I don't know if I personally like them more than the Frag, but they are cool for sure. We figured I wanted to do something special for the Blade Show West show in Utah, and I'm going to screw it up, but Utah is like the honeycomb state I think they're like the beehive state. It's something to do with bees. I can't remember. I think it's the beehive state. My phone and my computer are both tied up right now recording this stuff, or I'd look it up real quick, but I think it's the beehive state. If anybody knows, y'all can jump in and correct me. It's something like that. It's something to do. There was outside the convention center there was like a little monument kind of thing. Somebody said Mormon state. Well, yeah, I don't think that's exactly what I'm going for. That's true too, but I mean, I don't think that has necessarily anything to do with the honeycomb and stuff. It's something that's like the beehive. I think it's either the beehive state or the honeycomb state or something like that. But anyway, there was like, if I remember right, there was even like some stuff in the street, like they had some like pavers that were lined up like honeycomb or whatever. So anyway, honeycomb was like a thing out there. So, and since I like it anyway and all that, I figured we'd try to whip some of those up and get some of those done to debut at the show. So, and on that note, we didn't mention it at the beginning, guys, but Blade Show West is coming up. By the time this is posted on Monday for the podcast, Blade Show West is going to be that weekend.
Yeah.
So
October 10th,
Friday and Saturday.
Yeah. Huh? And I was giving them the dates, October 10th and 11th. Salt Lake City, Utah. McNeese will be at booth 226. I will be in Hayden, Alabama. So,
yep. So if anybody is in the area or anything like that, you know, where you're able to come, then I definitely highly recommend it. It was a really fun, cool, interesting show to me when we did it last year. This will only be our second year doing it, but I'm really looking forward to it. So,
yeah,
it's pretty cool. So, and then while we're on that subject, we're also, those of you that are maybe more over towards the East Coast, the following weekend, we will be at Smoky Mountain Knife Works for their Fall Fest. And it's like, it's Fall Fest, and they have reps from a lot of the different brands there, actually. So we'll literally be behind the counter, working the counter, you know, behind our stuff. I hope they put me behind somebody else's stuff. I might be the world's crappiest salesman. So no, we'll be behind the counter representing our stuff and, you know, talking to everybody and that kind of stuff. So, and we're getting some special stuff done last minute as usual, but we're getting some special stuff done to send to them to have for the show up there too, and get them a restock on some stuff. So if you're anywhere in that area over here around the East Coast, then the following weekend, come join us out there.
Yeah.
Should be a lot of fun.
For sure. I've been considering trying to finagle my way up to Gatlinburg, because it's been a while since I've even been to Smoky Mountain Knife Works, because every year we kind of put it off. Every year we went up there, we hadn't been in a few years, but we would always put it off until the last day of the trip, and then we're super tired or there's a lot of traffic or whatever, and just like, nah, I'll be fine. And we just drive on home. So,
See, I'm kind of the opposite. I'm like the kids that if you're taking them to Disneyland, I'm like, no, we got to go. We got to go now, first stop. we're going to Smoky Mountain. I'm not as bad. Now, usually we only go like once per trip now, but in years past, there was times when we'd go a couple of times, if not three times throughout the, day, you know, so we'd usually be there. That'd be when we would be there for like a week at a time. So yeah. I'd be popping in pretty regular.
I mean, I've told my wife before to just leave me. I will be fine. I mean,
yeah,
I will be okay. Like, you know,
yep.
I'm not a toddler.
That's what Amy and them used to do. Yeah. When we were going up there in years past and the kids were younger, then me and Luke would stay. They would go in there with us for a little bit. And then obviously they kind of seen everything they wanted to see. And I'd still be, you know, walking around drooling and then eyes bugged out of my head. And they'd go to another little store down the road and check it out while Luke and I perused all the cool stuff they had there. And it's like, guys, if you've never been there, like, or if you have been there and haven't paid attention to it, there is like, I could literally spend at least half a day just walking around in there and looking at all the like memorabilia stuff. Like they've got, it's essentially like a museum. Well, I know they used to have an actual museum up on the top floor. I'm not sure if that part's still open or not.
I don't know.
I want to say it's not. Okay. But it is like there's just all over the walls everywhere. There's just all kinds of vintage stuff, all kinds of historical stuff. Even the last time I was there, I saw stuff and I've been in there a bunch of times, guys. Like, I mean, a bunch of times. And then somebody said it's not. So, yeah, the museum part, I was thinking that it closed a while back. But there's still tons of historical displays in there, like literally all over the walls. And I went around to there was some bathrooms. It was not like the main bathrooms or whatever, but we found this other kind of like hidden bathroom and went back to it. And I got to looking and on the walls, there was all this, it was like paperwork and stuff. And what it was like old invoices and receipts and communications and stuff back and forth between, like knife companies and stuff. So it would be like invoices for, you know, knives to like, I don't remember what all, and some of it you almost couldn't make out because a lot of it was like handwritten and stuff like that. But then it would have the font, you know, or the header and stuff. Like it'd be like from Buck Knives or from whatever, like way back in the day when they were doing all the handwritten invoices and receipts and stuff. It was really cool. Like I could probably spend an hour just sitting there looking over those and trying to decipher everything. Like it's just really, really cool stuff.
Yeah, that does sound cool. So much, yeah, like I used to love like going to the museum parts and just looking around every bit of it. I mean, there's just a ton to see. But Dave Savarte, I believe that's how you pronounce that, said, what is your favorite blade show? He's never been to West.
Gotcha. I mean, I guess I'd have to say Atlanta just because it's the biggest and, you know, that's the one that pretty much everybody is at. And it's, I'll say this, it's my favorite, but it's also like the hardest, the most draining, the most, you know, difficult from a vendor standpoint.
Yeah.
I really wish, honestly, that as cool as it is, I really kind of wish it was just a 2-day show. The third day is, you know, almost unnecessary, but at the same time, I already complain because I don't get to like talk to everybody that I want to talk to and see the stuff that I want to see. And Sunday is the only chance I have, even basically a slight chance to do that. So if that wasn't there, then I really wouldn't get any chance to do any of that. So,
yeah, every year when I leave, I never feel like I've had enough time. It feels like it's over too soon. So like, I would also say that Atlanta is my favorite mostly because it's the closest, but you know,
that factors in.
Yeah.
And you too. I mean, I've got the most history with it. I mean, we've been doing that show for like 17 years, I think, something like that. Amy and I have. So it's, you know, that was the first big show that we ever went to, first show we ever exhibited at, you know, all that kind of stuff. So it's, you know, there's a lot of history there. And the one other thing that I would say about Blade Show Atlanta that is better in a lot of ways than the other two shows is there's not really that I know of, maybe I just not part of the cool club and don't know about it, but as far as I know, in Texas or in Utah, there's not really like a kind of singular gathering place after the show like there is in Atlanta, the pit in the, you know, in the lobby of the Waverly.
Yeah.
It's kind of set up to be, you know, a gathering place for everybody. And, you know, I know there's some people that gather up in different places, but that's kind of like the main place. And so, and it has been for forever. So, And to my knowledge, there's not really anywhere like that in either of the other Blade shows for West or Texas.
Yeah, I mean, I know some makers or brands have tried to, tried to, like, you know, rent a place out in Texas and have sort of a after party type situation, but it's never going to be like, you know, there's always like a cap limit of how many people can come. And it also, it's just, you know, it's not as easy to, as just wandering downstairs and, you know, all of a sudden there's a sea of people, like,
It almost is more of like a, and I know the guys that are putting that stuff on are not like necessarily being picky or whatever about it, but it still kind of at least feels like an invite only kind of thing. You know what I mean? Whereas, you know, nobody is that, no particular person is putting on the thing at, you know, at the pit. It's just
in Atlanta,
where everybody goes. Right.
Yeah.
So a huge, probably the majority, not all by a long shot, but definitely lots and lots of the people, vendors especially in Atlanta, are staying at the Waverly. So it makes sense. You're right there. You're in the lobby of the hotel that you stay at. You don't have to, you know, you get done, ready to go back to the room. You just get on the elevator and you're gone. You don't have to, you know, drive or get an Uber or whatever back to somewhere else. And that's the other thing that I've noticed about the other shows is there's a little more, I feel like, even with the vendors, they're a little more spread out than some of the hotels right around the area versus the majority of them being right there in the one. So it's a little different, but still a lot of fun. And
I like Texas a lot.
Texas is a lot of fun. Like I said, it's a little hard to say too, because we've got a lot of history in Atlanta. I think we've done 3 or 4 years now in Texas, and then this is only going to be our second year in Utah. So, you know, we really haven't, I couldn't give it a real fair judgment because until I've done, put in a few more years at the other ones, really, I would say, but I feel like Atlanta's probably always still going to be king unless something changes drastically. So it's just kind of the show. So, all right. I saw another question here. I don't know what that, I'm sure there's some clever meaning behind this username that I'm too dense to get, but do you see the one I'm talking about the European market?
Yeah. Don't worry about that. That's Paul.
Paul.
Yeah.
Paul, right, Paul. Sorry. If your thing is something clever, I'm too dense to get it. So we'll just say Paul. So he asked, either of you have a dealer in Europe? Is the market across the pond worth dabbling in for makers? I'm going to let you answer that first, and then I'll get into it.
No, I don't have any dealers in Europe. Although I have been called several times by a company in the UK asking for, like, knives and stuff, but they want pallets, not five at a time or something like that. So, you know, I don't know how I keep getting on their list. I keep telling them that. I've gotten like a couple calls in the same day from the same company. I've sold a few knives to, on the other side of the pond, a couple in Germany, a couple to Switzerland. I think that's it. All my other international ones have been to Canada Canada. So
I got you. So yes, we do have a couple of dealers, and I'm probably going to screw up by not remembering them all to mention them all, but the two that get the most product from us is Mukama, and I want to say I always get it mixed up. I think they're in Finland, or I may have it backwards. You got Mukama, and then we have what's the name of the other one?
Lamnia.
That's right, Lamnia. And off the top of my head, I can't remember exactly where the two of them are. One of them I know is in Finland.
I think Lamnia is in Sweden, but I've been wrong before.
Sweden, that may be right. Hey, Dave, if you're still on here, you should be able to help me out with that. Lamnia and Mukama. Those are our two main European dealers currently. And I'd actually love to push way more product over there, to be totally honest with you. I think there's a lot of potential, at least for us, I won't say untapped, but an underdeveloped market. Since we do have dealers there, it's not totally untapped, but definitely underdeveloped for us. We could definitely do a lot more over there, I feel like. So I would really like to get more product headed that way. You got to think from a business owner's standpoint, whatever might be going on. And I know the world economy somewhat kind of follows typically the U.S. economy, but we may have issues going on with our economy here or whatever, ups and downs that may not necessarily be the same for other places in Europe or, you know, we're kind of talking about Europe right now. So just say Europe, you know, even Canada, you know, we actually were just able to start sending some more stuff to our Canadian dealer because he had to bow out for a little bit because of the tariffs. And so now I guess they came to an agreement. And so he's able to get stuff again. So we just sent another shipment to Thunderbird up there. But anyway, that's not Europe. Dave said Lamnia is in Finland. Thank you. Yeah, where's Makama? I should know this since they're one of our dealers, but Makama too. Okay. They may both be that actually may be right. They may both be in Finland. So John, says send some your way. Are you a dealer? I probably should know this, but I'm not recognizing the name. So never know. We might get hooked up with a new dealer right here on the spot. So Dave, yes. Knife Lounge. I actually need to talk to you about them because I know they're your buddies with them because, yes, they technically carry our products, but for some reason they've, John said no, but I love your knives. Just send them
fair shot.
Fair enough. I appreciate it. So yeah, actually I need to talk to you, Dave, about Knife Lounge because I'm not exactly sure why they just haven't really been ordering a lot of stuff. And I don't know if they're thinking that we've had it be the case in the past with other dealers, not necessarily international dealers, but just dealers in general, where they basically are kind of waiting on us to say, hey, we've got product, and we're sitting here waiting on them to say, hey, we want product. Yeah. And, you know, cause I'm not one to, I try to not be super aggressive and be like, you know, and be like, hey, you ready to take stuff? Ready to take stuff? You know? So it's, you know, so yeah, I want to see if, you know, if there's anything we can do to try to push more stuff over there, because the last batch of stuff that we sent to them, to my knowledge, the best we could tell, sold like really quick. So honestly, I was expecting them to turn around and place another order, you know, really quickly, and then we didn't hear from them. So I think that's probably one of those cases where we're a little too laid back for our own good and should probably be a little more pushy and be like, hey, because I know that some of the other companies are, they have actual, you know, salespeople that are hitting up the dealers and stuff and actually pushing product, and we're probably reaching the point where we need to start doing more of that. Some of that's probably just, like I said, being too laid back for our own good.
But yeah, I think I would definitely have that same issue too, where you know, I would expect them to come to me and versus the other way around. But you know, I also understand that they're trying to, you know, deal with 30, 40 different brands or, you know, however many they carry. And, you know, if they're reaching out to every single one, or, you know, things can slip through the cracks. So,
right.
You know?
Yeah. And it's, I don't know. I think that all of us I don't mean this in a bad way, but I think it's just natural when you're creating a product and you're putting your thing out there, that's going to be a good clip. I've done that before, haven't I?
Yes.
Yeah. So anyway, when you're hanging your junk out there for the world to see, and you tend to get a little like, it's kind of ego, but it's also kind of like, you're also kind of like too timid. It's like, you want people to come to you. You don't want to be like, feel like you're hawking your stuff, you know?
Yeah.
Like but I definitely think, especially if you get a little taste of it, where you get some stuff going and people are buying your stuff pretty well, like, it's really easy to let that get to your head, and you kind of feel like, well, they hadn't reached out to me, so, like, you know, screw them or whatever. Like, but that's really not helpful at all from a business standpoint. I'll tell you this, if I had taken that approach, even down to stuff like collabs and stuff, if I had taken that approach to, say, Spyderco, then, which I did for a while. I kept thinking for years that, and I know, Chase, you've heard the story, but for years I made the McBee or the Killer Bee, and I And I kept thinking, you know, I didn't really know how it worked was part of it. Like I, and probably it was just that I didn't have, I guess just didn't have the balls to reach out to them. You know, I kept waiting on them to reach out to me. I was like, oh man, I'm putting out this knife. It's doing pretty well. You know, it should be a perfect fit to work with them. Any day now, they're going to hit me up and, you know, and want to do a collab. And it never happened. And then finally I was talking to somebody and, a friend at a show, and he was like, man, you need to reach out to them. Like sometimes you just have to like, just reach out to them, ask them, you know, what you need to do to send them a sample or whatever. And I did. And here we are. I don't even know how many years into it at this point, but several years now.
Almost running 10,
of,
I think.
Of a collab with, huh?
Almost 10. It was either 2016 really? Or 2017.
Yeah. I guess it is going on 10 years. Getting pretty close.
Yeah.
I'll have to go back and look and see when they actually picked it up, but which is pretty long, pretty long deal with them. Like they don't typically run stuff for super long, like collab stuff like that for super long. So, yeah. So, but if I had continued down that path of just being, you know, waiting on them to come to me, then we still wouldn't have the collab, you know?
Yeah.
So,
yeah. I mean, there's definitely times to push the envelope and, you know, be the outgoing party, I guess. But I don't know. It's just always weird for me, I guess, approaching a dealer being like, hey, you want to buy stuff? Like, you know,
it's only weird because it makes you feel, and I say this because I've been there and I still am sometimes. As you know, we've been doing it long enough now that we pretty much got, I mean, not that we're not open to do more dealers or whatever, but we're pretty much got, you know, a pretty good dealer list,
full roster,
but still to reach out to somebody new, like it's really just a, not ego, but it's like it's a lack of confidence. Honestly, it's just like, you know, you're worried that they say no. Well, then does that mean they don't like your stuff? And if it's somebody you're wanting to work with, then chances are you at least somewhat respect their opinion. So like you don't want them to, you know, and again, I'm not knocking you because I've been there.
Yeah.
Like I've done the exact same thing.
It's also sort of just a subversion of the, you know, buying dynamic. You know, you walk into a store, you pick out what you want, and you tell them you want to buy it. They don't come to you, you know, when you walk in the door and say, hey, you want some duct tape and WD-40? I mean,
well, yes and no. If that was totally true, there would be no sales jobs out there.
Yes and no.
You walk into a car lot, there's salesmen there for a reason. And I know most of them are annoying, but that might be a bad example. But you know, typically most, and different customers are different too. You know, some people want to walk in and they don't want anybody to speak to them or anything. You know, some people, you know, for me, for example, what I like, if I walk into a store, you know, I like to say hello, they're polite, whatever, you know, just, and then, hey, let me know if you need anything. And then if I'm hovering around and I'm looking like I'm obviously interested in something and I'm kind of, you know, looking over at you, then take the hint and come and help me with the thing or whatever. But like,
I mean, but again, in that scenario, time, I think
there are tons and tons and tons of businesses out there that rely exclusively on salespeople to bring in business, or at least almost exclusively. And tons of people that have made tons of money just off of being in sales.
Yeah.
So, I don't know that I would call it an actual subversion of it, because it may be a subversion of what your particular type of shopping that you like to do.
For sure.
But not necessarily.
I'm that person who's doesn't want to be bothered. I'm going to look for what I want to look for. If I need your help, I will come get you. And, you know, but in that case, if I'm the person behind the counter and, you know, I'm seeing somebody look around, I will be proactive about it and come to them. And, you know, like if a dealer's constantly commenting on a particular model or, you know, everything I put out, you know, and I'm sort of in more constant contact from them with them, I would say that's a little bit of a different scenario there.
Yeah. Yeah. It just kind of depends. Yeah. I mean, not everybody is that kind of shopper for one thing.
Yeah.
And it's just, and there's definitely a fine line there. Nick Nichols said, salespeople are the devil. You just haven't encountered the right kind of salespeople, Nick. So yes, a lot of them are highly annoying. Nobody likes to feel like they're being sold.
Yeah.
If you're a good salesperson, then you're helping people without making them feel like you're selling to them, which is a big difference. So, yeah, the watch and tape, we know we've been, if you were on here early, we're having this whole setup is not very good. Next time we do a live and try to record it for a podcast, we'll do it differently. We needed headphones and we didn't know ahead of time. Nick, I'm a salesperson. Well, are you a good one or are you an evil one? I think you're telling on yourself there.
Yeah, I was more so just talking about like cold calling a dealer that, you know, out of the blue, which is more so like what the situation I'm usually in, because I don't usually have stuff for dealers on a regular basis.
Right.
So it's more so just kind of out of the blue versus if they say, hey, I want some stuff next time you can fit me in, you know, and they kind of tell me what they want, I can, you know, work that into the schedule and, you know, get that out there versus, you know, just them expecting me to come to them next time I have an opening or whatever.
Yeah. So are you talking more specifically about dealers you're already working with and just sending them more product? Yes.
Yes and no. I mean,
okay.
But,
so yeah, I get that. And like I said, I still have an issue with that. You have to change your tactics based on your volume. Oh, okay. Sorry. We said volume. I thought we were still talking about the feedback stuff on the, recording. Yeah. He's talking about,
that's how I was taking it too. I was confused.
Yeah. Yeah. Sorry. Yeah. My brain was in a different place.
Yeah. But, you're definitely right. I think like volume does.
So I would definitely agree to, that it is a little awkward. Like if you're already working with somebody and like, it's been a while since they've gotten something, it's like, you know, but at the same time, I try to keep in mind, you know, it depends on the dealer too, because some of these guys are fairly small. They don't have tons of brands, you know, but the big guys, even us, like we're a very small percentage of the volume that they do in a year, you know, like that we are, even in a month, like we are a very small, just because of the size we are and the amount of volume that we can put out. Like we're a very small part of their sales throughout the, out of the year, they're, you know? And so I try to keep in mind that they have a lot of other people that they're dealing with. We're not necessarily front of mind to them. I mean, they've got literally hundreds of brands. Some of these bigger dealers have literally hundreds of brands that they're dealing with. And there's no way that, you know, that's where I feel like it comes back on us. You know,
that was,
you have
sort
to be
of what
a little
I was
more proactive, stay in front of their face and, you know,
and that then was
as
what
far
I was
as
saying,
like new dealers, like if they're say, somebody that you maybe want to work with, but they haven't reached out to you or whatever. And we all know in today's world, in social media and stuff, like we feel like we're putting our stuff out there and that everybody in the knife community should be seeing it, but such a small percentage actually see it. You know what I mean? Yeah. And even if they do, was it enough to catch their eye and make them stop and actually look at it? So like, I mean, they may not have even, you know, I mean, they might not have even heard of you. Like, and it's been several years ago now, but you know this because you were with me at the time. You know, Witty at USA Made Blade, that's how we started working with him. I reached out to him.
Yeah.
And I literally, and again, I said I'm guilty of it. I literally had to kind of swallow my pride because I was at the point then where I was like, surely they've heard of us. Like, I feel like they would know who we are. But then I hit him up and he was like, oh, yeah, no. Like, they basically didn't even know who we were. Never even heard of us, you know, checked out what we were doing and you know, now we've sold hundreds of knives through them. So
yeah,
if not, you know, it's just,
there's also that like where you've got to realize that you're not the center of the universe. As it turns out, you're the center of your universe and you know, you're in it day in, day out, and you're kind of in your own world. But you know, like I said earlier on, like, you know, these brands or these dealers may have, you know, tons of brands like you were talking about, and it's easy to, I mean, I couldn't imagine trying to balance all that out, like, you know, trying to keep in contact with every single person and every single thing and, you know.
Yeah,
but
me either. I'm sure it's a lot. I know some of them have, you know, multiple buyers that are, you know, have different accounts or whatever. And so I honestly think that that's just part of it too, is that we just haven't reached a size yet where for some of these dealers, we're just not, you know, we're just not big enough fish to where they're really going to give us a ton of attention. So like, I just have to swallow my pride and remember that and be like, okay, well, you know, if I need to hit them up, then I'm going to hit them up. You know, that's the thing.
No, Nick Nichols,
want to be small. Yeah, careful what you wish for, brother. But seriously, though, like, it's full, you know, it's really easy to get full of yourself and think that, like, you're, you know, you're doing pretty good and you've got all this stuff going on. But then you look around and, like, it's we're still pretty small fry in the, we are punching up big time for the size company that we are. And the I don't really know how to say it, like, kind of the circle that we're in as far as, like, the names that get mentioned with our name, like the category that we're in as far as, you know, price point and, like, what people collect, you know, the people that collect our stuff, the other brands that they collect, you know, we are very much like the little guy and, like, punching up in our weight class, you know,
compared to Hinder, Chris Reeve, you know, those guys. Yeah.
Right. We're several times smaller than all of them, than pretty much all of the, maybe Les George is, and I don't know how many knives he's putting out. He's freaking CNC wizard, so he's probably putting out more knives with less people than we're managing to do. But as far as sheer size of employees and stuff like that, he's, you know, another one that's probably similar to us. But, like, but most of these other guys, yeah, like you said, that we're getting mentioned with, is, which is a huge compliment to me. You know, I mean, I'd much rather be that than the other way around. But, let's see, couple of people mentioning how awesome Witty is, which I won't argue with. Paul's talking about staying humble. Yeah, it is. It's, and a lot of that stuff, man, is, like, it's not necessarily stuff that anybody will see. It's not like we're walking around, like, you know, at least I hope I don't ever come off that way, like, thinking that we're the shit or something. But, like, it's just when it comes time to, like, hit somebody up and ask them if they want product, it's just really easy to be like, well, I feel like they ought to be hitting me up and wanting it. You know, I've got this cool thing that I've done and I, you know, I want people to like it. But yeah, you have to remember to be humble and you also have to remember that you're running a business and, like, your feelings don't really matter. Yeah. Like, they shouldn't. If they do, you're probably not going to be as successful. You got to put your feelings to the side and do what's got to be done for the business. If you stop back and look at it like that and forget, okay, let's just forget for a minute that this is my design. This is my name on the company. This is my baby, you know, and pretend that I'm the CEO or whatever, or the sales guy or whatever for some other company that I just work for. What would I do? And probably a big percentage of the time in those situations, that answer would be completely different than what our first inclination is as the owner, you know, type, you know,
designer,
the person with our name on the company, you know? So,
for sure.
I think that's always a good grounding way to look at it. Is like, all right, if forget everything else, if this was somebody else's company and I was just working here, what would I think we needed to do? And if you need to sell product, guess what the answer is going to be? Hit somebody up and try to sell them product.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah. I know if you even look at a CNC machine, you all of a sudden get, salespeople flooding in, not even entirely sure how they get your email. But, you know, they they're relentless. But, you know, I was just looking. I was just trying to see, you know, what it looked like. But,
And it's what drives me crazy is when they won't put freaking prices on there, contact for quote. It's like, come on, man. Like, do you want to sell it or not? Like, just like, do you really want to waste your time? Like, I need to know if it's even something that I can even think about buying. You know what I mean? I mean, it's like, and then sometimes too, it's like I've reached out to companies where, you know, for big equipment and stuff and try to get a quote. And then, like, either they just, like, won't even send you a quote or they end up, like, they're just not very helpful and stuff. And it's like, I get that y'all are selling expensive machinery and that y'all probably get a lot of people that aren't serious, but at the same time, like, whether I'm serious right this minute, until I know the price, I don't know if I'm serious or not.
Exactly. Like, I think you would have a lot less tire kickers and, you know, people getting quote requests and stuff if you just put the damn price on the website.
Right. Like, you wouldn't have to be trying to, like, sell to people that can't afford it.
Yeah.
You know, but, like, even if I'm not a serious buyer right that minute, so say it comes back and it's way more expensive than what I expected or whatever, well, then I might not be serious about it right now, but in a year I may be. And do you really want to turn me off now? And then maybe, like, screw that guy. I'm just going somewhere else. Like, anyway, But I think the biggest thing we're talking about, and we've had other people talking about the sales stuff or whatever, but dude, the, like I said, nobody wants to feel like they're being sold to. If you can just make people feel, as a salesperson, if you can just make people feel like you're being helpful and that you have a solution for their problem, then you got it made. That's what people want. They want somebody that can solve a problem for them. Like,
yeah.
Sometimes you may even have to explain to them what the problem is that they have that they don't even know about. But still, if you can frame it as that you are solving a problem for them, then versus, you know, hey, what's going on? What can I get you into today? Let me get you out. And just slick talking, you know, annoying, like nobody likes that. And it's to the point now where that's so common. It's basically a, you know, the easy, you know, not truly well-trained salespeople. And then that's the tactics they use. And so it turns everybody off to it.
Yeah. That sort of reminds me of my father-in-law's a sales rep at like a, sort of similar to like a Granger type place on a smaller scale, like tool sales and stuff like that. And he'll have customers be like, well, I broke this drill bit of X and X size and I need 12 more because I went through a whole box of them. And he's like, well, what you really need is cobalt instead of high speed steel. And I'll sell you three of them. If you break all three of these, we'll explore other options and figure it out. But I'm not going to sell you 12 of them right now because I don't think you need that. And he's told that story to me a couple of times, but you know, that's just what that reminded me of.
And that's a good salesperson. And I'll say that my Haas rep is a good sales guy. Like he doesn't drive me crazy. He almost never hits me up. You know, when I need something, I hit him up. But he also, there's been multiple times where I've talked to him about like options on machines and stuff. And he knows that, you know, I'm still learning a lot about CNCs and stuff, you know, so like he could try to bullshit me and try to talk me into all these extra features. But he's like, man, like, you're not going to use this, or even like, hey, like Haas doesn't do a very good job at this. Like this feature or this thing right here, like honestly, you'd be better off to just, you know, get this aftermarket thing or whatever. And he's done that multiple times. And that actually, Dave, that's perfect timing, because what that does, Dave said, a good sales guy doesn't just sell products. He sells trust. Everything else follows, which is what that does. He's actually, you know, it makes me trust him because he's not trying to sell me everything under the sun. He's actually telling me, hey, don't buy this. Like, you know, knowing that he would make money off of it if I did. But he's like, yeah, no, you don't want this. This is not, you know, this isn't a good deal or whatever. So yeah, you're exactly right. We're probably getting pretty close to needing to wrap this up. We're going on close to an hour now. And guys, so you know, we're, Chase and I are doing this, and then we're going to try to record a second podcast for the following week, since I'm going to be out of town for the next two weekends and we won't be able to record. So I did see one more question that I wanted to hit real quick though, on our thoughts on the tariffs. So we've talked about this a fair amount, I think, a few episodes ago, back and forth. But do you want to go ahead and touch on that, and then I will?
Not a lot. I mean, it is what it is. I don't really. I will admit that my geopolitical attention has not been as well placed on it, and I don't necessarily understand, or have neither have I haven't read necessarily most of what is even going on. I just know that prices are going up due to tariffs because everyone's screaming about it. And so, yeah, I really don't have that much to say about it on my own.
Gotcha. All right. So I've got some thoughts on it. And again, I'm not an expert on it. I'm not an expert. I'm not an economist. I will say that if things progress the way they were laid out, that it's meant to progress, then in general, I'm for them. For one thing, like, I'm sick and tired, as you guys, most of you know, of, you know, us getting screwed over as far as it being so easy for these overseas companies to be able to, particularly the ones that are our enemies of the state, being able to just crank out stuff and, you know, basically screw us over in all the, just all the crap that goes with it, like all the unfair trade deficits and all that. And again, I'm not an expert on this, guys. But I do know that it's ridiculous that a company or a country can subsidize companies to undercut companies here. So say knife in the knife industry, the knife Chinese government subsidizes companies. In other words, they give them money so that they can operate at a lower price. They can basically offer their product at a loss because somebody is paying them on the back end to do that. And then, you know, not to mention the slave labor and the working conditions and all that, but then for them to be able to ship that stuff here and then just sell it so much cheaper because we're not doing anything about it on the tariff end of it or whatever, then that sucks. You know, I do like the thought if this were to lead to, and I have my definite doubts about it actually happening, but if it were to actually lead to eventually a way to continue tariffs and eliminate income tax, then depending on the particulars, I would definitely be for that because income tax is one of the worst freaking things that, like, especially at the level that it's at least, is one of the most ridiculous things that's happened in our country. So that's on us for letting us get out of hand. Paul said, yeah, 100%. Way too many people have, there was way too many greedy company owners and stuff in the past that decided to just, you know, make higher profit margins and sell everything out. And that's what they've done. And it's still happening, even in our industry right now. Like, it's actually gotten way worse in our industry in the last 10 to 15 years. So yeah, 100%. But it's definitely on up. I mean, yeah, you can't, you know, I'm not necessarily, do I think the practices that they use are fair? No, but they're our competition. They're not our friends. Like, they're trying to do everything they can for themselves. So I don't necessarily blame them exactly. We for sure should have never let it get to this point. But anyway, back, if we could do it to at least greatly reduce or eliminate income tax, then yeah, I think that's a good idea. Of course, I think cutting out a whole lot of excessive wasteful spending and stuff would be a way better way even to cut out a big percentage of the income tax, but maybe a combination of the two things. I do think I've seen other people talk about, bring up the point too, though, of like, you have companies like us that are, you know, we're currently trying to build up manufacturing in the U.S., but right now, because of the tariffs, if we go and buy certain pieces of equipment that cannot be bought here, they are not made here at all. Like, there's not an option. Like, there's no, you know, yeah, there's no, oh, buy it made in the U.S. Like, then those pieces of equipment have tariffs on them. So you've got companies that are doing what the government wants us to do, which is to bring manufacturing back here. But then we're paying the price, and we're not particularly in ourselves are not in this boat right this minute, but it could happen, you know, within the next couple of years. If you need a piece of machinery to build up your American manufacturing and that piece of machinery is absolutely not available in the U.S., then you're kind of stuck, you know? So, and I've heard it thrown out there that maybe there should be some, you know, a little more discrimination between just blanket tariffs and what's, you know, what's tariffs, what's not. Like, I kind of feel like I would agree that I feel like that if, you know, a company is buying machinery to bring here, that's not being, that they cannot, they don't have an option to buy here, you know, then yeah, it, you know, I can see both sides of it from that angle. Like, it sucks to have, you know, depending on what the tariff is, say it's even a 10% tariff. If you pay a 10% tariff on $500,000 piece of equipment, that's a significant hit, you know, for a company that's trying to bring back American manufacturing. So it's, yep, it's not a perfect world. I mean, and I knew up front that we were all going to have to go through a little bit of pain up front to hopefully make things better down the road. But we'll see. It depends on how they keep being implemented and how the money that's brought in from them is used, whether or not it actually helps us or whether it's just a way for the government to take more money and use it for all the wasteful crap and that they use it on. It kind of depends. That time will tell with that. So yeah, then
I'm not seeing questions on my end anymore. So
okay. I just saw one more comment popped up, that we'll address and then move on. Lots of companies claim USA made, but they're actually don't, or they source international and just assemble here. Yeah, that happens. I don't know how much it happens in the knife industry. I'm sure it happens some. there too. And that gets into the weeds of, you know, what is legally required to call it made in the USA and all that stuff. And honestly, I think getting into that whole, I've seen that discussion get, you know, talked about recently. And honestly, I think it was basically a load of crap. It's just a way to water down what it means so that people care less about it. And I think most people understand that something that's made in the U.S., even if the, you know, even if the steel was smelted and turned into a big block overseas and shipped here, and then it's rolled out and then it's turned into a knife blade. And then same thing with like the titanium. If the raw ingredients are, and it's shipped over here and, you know, in a big chunk or whatever, and it's rolled out into sheets and then turned into a knife blade. I think there's very few people that would argue that that finished product is an American made product. Like that's my opinion on it. Yeah. You start getting down into the nitty gritty of, you know, where did the, you know, every single component of every single component of every single component come from. And basically it just waters it down so that people are like, oh, well, you just don't know. You don't really know anyway, so it just doesn't matter. Well, that's not true. It does freaking matter.
Yeah, because the adhesive on your sticker that you included wasn't made in the U.S.
What now? Yeah, right, right. Something is like, yeah, is the adhesive on the sticker that you put on there, was it sourced in the U.S.? Like, that's freaking stupid, man. Like, and all that conversation is a way to water it down so that people will care less about it. And whoever's having that conversation has a vested interest in people caring less about it, put it that way. So that's, to me, yes. If as long as you're being honest is the number one thing. If you're getting parts made somewhere else and you're assembling them here, then you be honest with people. You tell them what you're doing. You label it that it's made with, you know, foreign and domestic parts or whatever, assembled in the U.S., whatever. That's, you know, it's... I definitely prefer as much made in the U.S. as possible, and then be honest about it, whatever you're doing. That's what it boils down to. Be honest and transparent about what you're doing. So anyway, all right. So guys, I hope that the live was fun for those of you on Instagram. We greatly appreciate you guys joining in on here. I hope for the podcast that it ends up not being a total nightmare. We'll see. We'll try to get it planned out better next time now that we know we need headphones and all that good stuff. So we'll get that figured out, because I'd really like to do this again sometime. It was actually a lot of fun to just kind of have a live conversation and record it. So you got anything else to wrap us up, Chase?
Nah, I'm good.
All right. Well, we will see those of you that can be there in Utah this weekend. And then if not there, maybe at Smoky Mountain Knife Works the following weekend. And we appreciate you guys. Hope you have a great week.
See you guys.